Welcome to episode 269 of the Women of the Military podcast. This week, my guest is Monica Mohindra. She is the director of the Veterans History Project of the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. And in this episode, we focus on the Veterans History Project and highlight the importance of collecting the stories of veterans. We also discuss what information was collected by the Veterans History Project. And of course, we discuss how you can get involved and how people are using the information that the Veterans History Project is collecting. And because it's Women's History Month, we also wanted to highlight some of the stories that they collected in their directory. And so we talked a lot about the 6888 Central Post Directory Battalion. They're the only African-American female battalion that was stationed overseas in Europe. And we also highlighted some other amazing groups of women that served primarily during World War II. If you want to share your story of service or know a veteran who you think might be interested, you can learn more at loc.gov/vets. So that will be in the show notes as well so that you can find it easily. And before we get started, I want to remind you that Women of the Military podcast is on Reese Across America Radio on Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, and you can listen on iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app, or Odyssey. Now, with that out of the way, let's get started with this week's interview. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Women of the Military podcast. I'm really excited to have Monica here from the Library of Congress. We are going to talk about the 6888 and the importance of collecting veterans' history, so I'm really excited about that. So, welcome to the show, Monica, and tell us a little bit about who you are and how you ended up at the Library of Congress.
Well, first, I have to thank you, Amanda, for having us here and for the work that you do to elevate the stories of veterans and military-connected people. I really appreciate that. It's very similar to our work at the Veterans History Project with the Library of Congress. And my name is Monica Mohindra. I'm the director of the Veterans History Project here at the Library of Congress. And I'm here because I have a personal connection. I'm the spouse of a Navy veteran, and we began our relationship while he was still serving. So I feel like I have a little bit of an insight into that, but certainly I have a personal call to make sure that the stories of our veterans in the fullness of all contexts is shared and that we all understand how we connect to that collective history. And I can think of no better way to do that than what we have as a nation, as a treasure for our nation here at the Library of Congress, pulling all these stories together of those who served for the U.S. from World War I through the more recent conflicts.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. And I love that the specific focus on veterans and their stories, because, I mean, I feel like the more that I've done research about women in the military, the more I realize like how quickly and easily it is to lose history, especially from a small group. So let's talk a little bit about what the Veteran History Project is, just so that people can know that as a baseline.
Absolutely. The project at the Library of Congress through the American Folklife Center here was started, really, if you can cast your mind back to the year 2000, there was a cultural preoccupation with World War II. And it was a great idea had in many places at the same time, which was, how do we capture these stories before they're no longer easily accessible? And the idea was for individuals across the country, building on the legacy really here at the Library of Congress of this kind of work. But instead of sending people out, instead of sending professional oral historians or others out to do something like that, what they did was they gathered professional oral historians, folklorists, folks from around the library to ensure that the materials would be available to the public, you know, from Guam to Maine, from Puerto Rico to Florida, so that these individual moments of capturing this story of U.S. veterans, again, I do say from World War I through the more recent conflicts, would be available to individuals. At the time that it started and was unanimously passed by legislation, there were still World War I veterans among us, and thank goodness that we are able to have those stories for people to hear and see those firsthand accounts. In the case where that can't happen or to better flesh out the story, we are able to take the first person narratives as presented through items like photographs, letters, journals, diaries that tell the more complete story, but also enable us to put visuals with the oral history that we're able to get through the audio and video recordings. So what is the project? It's such a large thing to try and encapsulate, but it is a body, a corpus of now over 117,000 individual stories of veterans' first-person experience, those who served for the U.S. from World War I through the more recent conflicts, as told to people in their communities. And that's a really important part of the process, because the first benefit is a conversation just like this one. And then the ripple effect of benefit goes out from there. And we're continuing to get those stories at a rate of about 200 to 300 a month, thank goodness, because there's so much more to hear.
There really is. There's so much more to hear. And I mean, so many people, when they think of veterans, they think of men, but you guys also focus specifically on women's stories. So how many collections do you have from female veterans?
Of the 117,000 individual stories that we have, about 6.5% of our collections are those of women service members. And that is a number that I don't love, that I'm not proud of, and has been sort of a consistently low number across our years of collecting, over 20 years now. So I'm really grateful for this opportunity with you to highlight how we all need to work together to elevate that number.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, right now there's about 20% women. And so, I mean, you expect it to be a low number, but 6.5 is even a lot lower than 20%. So, but it's important for women to share their stories. And I think based on like the response I've gotten from the podcast, women do want to share their stories, but sometimes they don't know where. So that's why I'm excited to talk about like what you guys are doing and how people can get involved. So I guess that kind of leads into like, why are you focused on calling for more women's stories? Because you need more, but is there anything else to it?
It's always a good time to shed light on the stories of women who serve. And I think it speaks to a larger cultural phenomenon, which is when you ask, you know, who is a veteran? If you're in front of a group of people and you say, you know, who here is a veteran? Plenty of people, including men, won't stand up. And plenty of people looking at what else is going on, you know, in perspective to their service, won't really identify themselves as people who are veterans, quote unquote, and people in the room who are not service members. When they close their eyes and they think who is a veteran, they tend to imagine a particular image. And that particular image is usually, I'm making some assumptions here, but it's usually fed by sort of a cultural assumption through movies and television shows. But if you ask a group of people, many of whom may have served in the military, who here served for the U.S., if you frame that question a little bit differently, they may then raise their hand. And so I think highlighting women veterans and calling that to light gives us an even greater opportunity to understand what is the full scope of service and what does that mean. It's not just the people who were, as they say, at the tip of the spear or in the foxholes. It really is the continuum of service from things that we can't even imagine, you know, like the importance of bookkeeping, the importance of duties that are beyond normal civilian comprehension, but that range the gamut from everything that is a support to service. And so focusing on women is always an appropriate and good thing to do. And taking the opportunity of Women's History Month to put a spotlight on challenging all of us to really think about who are the veterans who walk amongst us is really just too good of an opportunity to pass up.
Yeah, I mean, as a woman veteran, I really relate to that. I'm in a lot of women veteran Facebook groups, and so many women talk, especially around Veterans Day, of like how they didn't do enough or how they get, you know, discounted or questioned for their service. And so I know that's something that I've experienced, but I was on the tip of the spear, so I set people back in their place very quickly if I ever have to work. But if I hadn't, you know, deployed and been attached to an infantry unit, I feel like it would be a lot harder to have those conversations because I would feel like I would obviously feel very different than if I hadn't done that. But I don't feel like men and women, no matter what you did to serve your country, you're a veteran and you should be proud of your service, because like you said, every job is important to the military, and the military couldn't function. People have to deploy, people have to stay home, and there's so much, you know, intricacies that come into service. And so I don't want anyone to ever feel like their service isn't valuable because they were, you know, just in the military. You know, people like to use that just word. And I know one of the groups that you have been focusing on is the 6888 Central Post Battalion. And I just did a roundup yesterday and I highlighted their story because they're just such an amazing group of ladies. So can you tell a little bit about their story and what you guys are doing?
Yes, we're so excited to be taking some really unique opportunities to highlight the 6888 Central Postal Battalion. Their history is really just now starting to come to light, and they have such an exceptional contribution to the United States' success in World War II, and they fought against such large amounts of discrimination based both on their gender and their color. It was a segregated unit of the Women's Army Corps in World War II, and it was the only all-African-American, all-female unit to be deployed overseas during World War II. And they were given, you know, an insurmountable task, really, to face rodent-infested, you know, decrepit conditions for more than 60 million pieces of backlog mail that had been waiting to get to people at the tip of the spear and who needed that encouragement and that connection from home, and they weren't getting it. They were given only 6 months to get through this, facing things like hostility and blatant discrimination. Not only did they accomplish their goal, you know, getting pieces of mail to nicknames, to unidentified regions, they did it in 3 months. They accomplished this in 3 months. They were 17 years old to 52 years old. And their accomplishments really, I think, can't be categorized. You hear that it talked about, like, what a boost in morale. But I think even those of us who didn't serve can look at times in our life where we just needed that extra bit of connection to a loved one that we were far away from. And that's the thing that pushed us to the next level of achievement. And if you imagine 60 million pieces, how many people that helped to push to that next level of achievement, I don't think we can categorize, quantifiably exactly what their contribution was, not to mention their contribution to each other and to the women who started to learn that story and looked to them as the leaders they truly were.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that I've learned about women veterans is that the things that you do not only have an impact on you, and of course you're doing whatever job the military gives you, but then that legacy continues on, and you see how, like, if you look at the stories and how they all tie together and, like, everything that happened to make it so that women could serve in all roles, it all starts with, like, little tiny steps. I mean, they're big steps for people who are doing them, but they're little tiny steps in history that make a change. And I think their story is just remarkable because when you think of, like, millions and millions of pieces of mail, it's just like, how did they do that? How did they do that?
Well, and you think about names that are very common and would have been very common at the time, and that they were able to direct this enormity of stuff, you know, in these deplorable conditions and cold and, conditions that any of us would struggle with. And then you add all the extenuating circumstances on top of it, and that they achieve such a success, I think, really speaks to the sense of cohesiveness that Major Charity Adams, you know, was able to pull the women together, and their sense of common purpose together. They all, in their stories, and we're so lucky at the Library of Congress to have these first person accounts, they all speak to that sense of cohesive, understood purpose in what they were doing. And I think, you know, I think there was some level of awareness that they were absolutely creating an inroad through history for other people to follow.
Yeah, that's so cool. So I think it's really cool that not only do they have these stories, but then there are ways that we can find these, like meet normal people who just want to learn more. So how, if someone wants to learn more about the 6888 or any of the projects, the stories that you've collected, how can they do that?
Oh, I really appreciate you creating that opportunity for your listeners, Amanda. The Library of Congress Veterans History Project, we have so many of these collections available on the Library of Congress website, which is loc.gov/vets, V-E-T. TS for veterans. And there you can find a bunch of these stories, which we're so pleased to be able to share. And we just recently published an online research guide, which you'll find there at that same website, which gets you right to the heart of the narratives of the women of the 6888 Battalion. But you'll also find all kinds of other research guides, guides that put things together. We have an online exhibit area that we call Serving Our Voices, and it all hangs together based on different themes. This is one we're very happy to be celebrating right now. But these collections are really special for a number of reasons, including that they're, in a few cases, they're continuing to be contributed to. Just a few weeks ago, we were able to add to the primarily oral history that we already had of Indiana Hunt Martin. Her daughter, Janice Martin, came and contributed an additional collection of photographs and materials. So you can really delve in there. Now, I'm sorry to say, it takes a while to stabilize and process these under the archival needs that we have. So you won't be able to hop on and see the most recent contribution from Janice Martin of Indiana Hunt Martin's story. But you can hear her interview. You can hear it in her own words and her experience. She continued to serve after the military. She served until 1986 in the federal government. And so her perspective is really one not to be missed. So again, that's loc.gov/vets. We also offer the opportunity for those who are going for a more in-depth experience, you know, whether it's to create something, to make something, to write something, and have the opportunity to come to the Library of Congress. Collections are also served, so you're in the actual collections in the American Folklife Center reading room here at the Library of Congress through appointment. And we really welcome people who have the opportunity to do that. But it's so great to be able to have so many of these available on the website. You can go today and take a look. We have blog posts and social media posts that also help to provide a little curatorial, historical context and comment around it. But you can get right to the authentic voice, right to the real person on that website.
I mean, it just sounds so amazing. I mean, I obviously have a podcast where I interview women veterans and talk about their story. And I learned so much from, you know, the different conversations. And I love that it's not like a written, because the first things I did were written interviews. And there was like not as much detail and you couldn't get to the story because of just how it went. But when you have like an oral history, it's just so special and it, and things come up that you never would have expected by having that. So it sounds so great. And I'll definitely put the link in the comments so that people can find it easily, because that way you can go and check it out. And then are there any other notable all-female groups that you like to call out that you have the stories of?
Oh, what a great and challenging question. it's so hard. You know, people always ask, you know, who's your favorite, or what are the groups you like to call out? And I sound cheesy, but I mean it. Every story here is so important and so important to all of us. But I couldn't pass up a question like that by not naming a few, particularly during Women's History Month. So I don't know if you've heard of the Code Girls, but that was a nickname given to a brilliant set of women code breakers who are also obviously credited with helping us win World War II. And their stories, you know, they took their sense of purpose and service, just as so many other women did. Some of them really taking this idea that it was secret to the grave with them. They never shared with their families what they were doing. And so we were very fortunate to be able to host their first national reunion. Some of them are still amongst us and with us, and their families of those who were deceased came and were able to represent them through photographs and their stories. There were also, not many people know, a few African-American women who served in the Code Girls. And, you know, through the racism of the time, they maintained until their deaths that they were just secretaries. And that really speaks again to the importance of lifting all of these voices, because there's no just in service, it's all service. So I have to put a shout out to them. And of course, you know, the Navy Waves, the WASPs, the Women Air Force Service Pilots, and then of course the Women Marines and the Coast Guard Reservists known as SPAR. And it's interesting because so much of this has its roots in World War One and World War Two, because as you alluded to, the evolution of women serving has changed, and those female groups and groupings and segregation has changed. But we love the opportunity to spotlight these, you know, truly glass ceiling breakers.
Yeah, a few years ago, I read The Woman Who Smashed Codes by Jason Fagon about Elizabeth Friedman, and her book was fascinating, and like her story, and I was like, this is just amazing. And I was really disappointed when I was like, because I highlighted her story yesterday as well, when I was researching, like a lot of the basic information wasn't there on the website, but I bet I could probably find stuff about her at the Library of Congress. But his book was like such a great resource because it had so much detail. And now I'm like, ooh, I think there's a book called Code Girls. I need to read that as well.
There is. And we were very fortunate to work with Liza Mundy on that. She's a New York Times bestselling author. And actually her now husband, Bill Nye of Bill Nye the Science Guy, his mother, Jacqueline Nye, was also a Code Girl. And her information is both here at the Library of Congress of the Veterans History Project and included in the really terrific book, which chronicles the work of several of the women who were code breakers. I definitely recommend both of those books.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that you highlighted that group, because that one is not talked about a lot, and I really didn't learn about them until I just happened to get that book on Audible, because I was like, oh, that's kind of an interesting title. And then I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. So we talked a little bit about like what you guys have, but how is the Veterans History Project used? You just mentioned that you used it in collaboration for, you know, an author to write a book. Are there any other ways that people can use the information?
You know, it's one of the things that is so rewarding about a national participation in this important archive is because we do have collections here at the Library of Congress in the Veterans History Project from, you know, every congressional district and state, and even representing the territories. You get this collective sense told by individual voices, and you get a sense of the human scale of service and of sacrifice, of wartime, of peacetime. And so we find that that is actually a really rich trove for all kinds of uses, whether it's family members who are looking to understand a little bit more about someone in their lives, their loved ones who served and who may have passed or are still living before they sit down to ask them questions, whether it's members of Congress trying to connect more deeply with their constituents. It's a constituent service for them to share experiences in speeches and talking points that they have, whether it's makers of all kinds. The collections have been used in everything from, you know, exhibits in places like airports or The Hague to museums, but also in, I think, somewhat unexpected ways. You might expect it in scholarly or academic, you know, publications, but imagine, you know, the collections used to inform a sculpture, which has happened, or a mural in Philadelphia, which has happened, or believe it or not, even a ballet that was commissioned to commemorate the Nuremberg trials. The choreographers started with the collections of the Veterans History Project of veterans who had some aspect of their work around the Nuremberg trials. So the ability to get right to the authentic personal narrative of individuals makes it ripe for so many uses. And I'm sure in our 20 plus years, we haven't seen the end of what all the uses could possibly be. And that's really the very exciting part about this, because it is more than a recycle symbol. These stories will continue to inspire and instruct and create understanding. And then the products that are made from that understanding and inspiration and instruction are then also part of the Library of Congress. And so this cycle keeps going and going and going. And it is, our privilege in this time, in this generation, for us all to see that and be part of it.
Yeah. So we've talked a little bit about, and it sounds like if you can dream it, you can do it. So like there's pretty much anything you want to do, the door is wide open. But now let's go on to the other side. How do veterans get their stories included into the Veterans History Project?
I like the way you framed that. Amanda, thank you so much. We are really focused on helping individuals place the burden on those who maybe didn't serve. So the focus is generally on the people who have veterans in their lives, their loved ones, their communities. We ask them to work with those veterans and ensure we have that story. But I love the idea that particularly through your podcast, there may be veterans who are actually thinking, oh, they're serious. They want my story because that's the truth of it. We started focusing on the volunteers to help gather this story because it seemed like too much of a burden to put on veterans themselves to say, hey, stand up and count yourself. So there's two things I would say to answer your question. One is anyone, whether you're a veteran or someone who knows a veteran to pull this story together, who wants to participate, please go to our website, loc.gov/vets. And there you will find a 7-minute video that walks you through the process, the required forms. We are an important archive, for our nation. So there are required forms and all kinds of little tips and tricks to make it a more meaningful and more productive experience. If you're a veteran, there are there's information there about how to self-submit. But if you're somebody who knows a veteran, there's all the information there, including the forms for how to conduct the interview or help the veteran gather this story. And whoever is listening to your podcast, I hope they hear this as a gold engraved personal invitation to participate.
Yeah, I mean, it's so important to share your story and to, there's like a healing process of like saying the words out loud and to talking to someone about it. At least for me, it's been very healing to just talk to other women, hear their stories, find the commonalities. And that history is so important. I mean, I'm always looking for more information about women veterans, and there's a lot of information. There's also a lot missing. And so your story is so important. So I really encourage people who are listening, if they know a veteran, to reach out to them and talk about this. And then if you are a veteran, it's so important to share your story. Nobody is just a veteran. We're all veterans. We all have a story to tell. I like the slogan, "Your story matters," because I think every story matters and every piece adds together.
I couldn't agree with you more.
So I mean, there's some like more questions about like how, like, does it have to be face to face, and like what if the person is no longer living, like, but I'm sure all that information is on the website. But do you want to do a quick overview of that?
Sure, absolutely. We do recommend 3 people to conduct an interview: the veteran, someone to ask the questions, and someone to handle the equipment. The equipment can be as simple as the recording device you're carrying around in your pocket likely right now. But we do want to frame the first benefit, which is the conversation that happens amongst the larger context of this being here preserved at the Library of Congress for use and for posterity. So to take that seriousness of purpose, and if you have the opportunity to use an external mic to make sure that everything is very audible and clear and crisp and that you're hearing the fullness of the story, we definitely recommend that you get a chance to review the forms and the process on the website, the little 7-minute video before you sit down with a veteran in your life. If you are a veteran, we hope you'll take advantage of taking a look at that in advance and check out some of the collections that we already have there for inspiration and for understanding the real value and the real context of all of this all hanging together. Sorry, what was your other procedural question?
What if it's a Gold Star family or the veterans passed on? Like, what do you're still collecting those stories. So what can families do?
Absolutely. When the legislation was created way back in October of 2000, they realized very quickly that they needed to also, in a very timely fashion, be able to gather those first person remembrances through narrative details and that first person narrative that can be shared through things like collections of original photographs, letters, documents, things like unpublished memoirs and journals. So there are specific instructions for going that route on the website for deceased veterans. And again, we're the focus is a first person remembrance. So it's never an opportunity for, well, so-and-so told me. It's always about making sure that we're capturing the veteran's actual first person experience through those materials. And in 2016, the legislation for the Veterans History Project that created it and makes it a law and makes it into being was amended, and there was a section added for Gold Star families. We have very particular procedures around that to be as compassionate and supportive, respectful of the Gold Star family perspective. There is a specific designation under that legislation for who qualifies as a Gold Star family member, and I will just point out to please reach out to us with questions about that. Our email address is all over that website, loc.gov/vets. But I will just say that one very particular designation around Gold Star family members is that both participants must be 18 or older, whether it's the Gold Star, family member or the interviewer, because in that case, obviously, we're talking about very difficult situations and we want to be respectful to them.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I was just thinking, like, I wrote a journal when I was deployed. And so something like that is something I don't know if I'm ready to part with yet. But that's history. And that's like, and I know so many veterans wrote a journal to like help process what they were dealing with. And I'm really excited. I'm going to go check out the website and learn more because I think it's really great what you're doing. It's something, I'm so passionate about collecting the stories of veterans. And it's great to know that I have this resource that I can use. So I think this is really great. I'm so glad we got to talk and tell everyone about what you guys are doing. Is there anything that you want to share to wrap up the interview?
Amanda, thank you for what you're doing again. I really appreciate it. And I love your personal attention to detail. Thank you for sharing about your journal. And I would just say the collections remain open. So if you're ready to contribute, maybe you have 10 letters you'd be willing to contribute or 10 photographs, and that would start your collection. And then when you're ready, I'm greedy for the fullness of your story, just like I'm greedy for the fullness of all of our veteran stories. But there is a limit. If you're not ready to part with your personal journal just yet, please know once you start your collection, you can keep adding to it. So, maybe in 10 years, maybe next year, there might be some time soon where you're willing to part with that because you want it to be here for posterity and be available for use. And so I do want to just say, as much as we want it when you're ready.
I love that. That's so great. I love that you can just get started and like slowly grow over time. I mean, that's an even more exciting thing, that it's not just like one thing you have to put everything in. You can just add stuff to it and keep the collection growing. So I'm really excited. I'm so glad we got to connect and do this. So thank you so much for your time. And I can't wait to share this episode in March.
Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for highlighting the Veterans History Project.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's episode. I really hope you take advantage of the work that the Veterans History Project is doing. Check out their website, learn how you can get involved. Also, I wanted to let you know that for the month of March, I've been doing a 4-week series every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, talking about women's history. The first week was Amazing Military Women from History, and the second week was Women in Nursing. And it talked about the history of how women came into the nursing field, and a large part of that was due to the military, and it was really fascinating to learn all about it. Then tomorrow, I will be focused on the time period from the 1970s to 1990, because a lot of amazing things happened for women that really changed the course of history leading up to the Gulf War, and then Operation Enduring Freedom and Operation Iraqi Freedom. So I'm really excited to share that information with you. And then The next week, the final Wednesday in March, I will be focused on the road to combat arms, and I'll talk about a lot of the history between the end of the Gulf War and then after September 11th and how women were finally allowed to serve in all combat roles and how that happened. And right now you can find those episodes on LinkedIn, Facebook, or X. And in the summer, I'm going to be rebroadcasting them on the podcast and on YouTube. So if you can't find them now, I'll link to them in the show notes if you want to check them out. But you can also wait for the summer and they'll be on the podcast as a series to help you get caught up on what you missed. So I'm really excited about all the history that I learned and putting the series together, and I really hope that you guys will enjoy it as well. So I'll put those links in the show notes, and I can't wait to see you guys all back next week.